Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, February 1st, 2018. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. 100% of public testimony at an Idaho House Education Committee hearing today in favor of new climate standards for climate science standards for schools, despite skepticism from lawmakers. Student referendum coming at WSU to save the Evergreen student newspaper, and cougar sightings in Pullman. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. 100% of the public testimony at an Idaho House Education Committee hearing today in Boise was in favor of proposed new revised science content standards for schools that have been recommended by the Department of Education and that reflect climate change. But Republican lawmakers on the committee are still skeptical of adding the standards to the state's curriculum. Last year, legislators removed references to climate change from school science standards. The Weather Channel reported last year Idaho is the only state to do so. Republican Representative Paul Amador of Coeur d'Alene quizzed Education Department Academics Director Scott Cook about the supporting evidence put in the science standards.
These standards put a premium on the performance element, and our traditional definition of content standards was what students need to know and can do. In the sense of science, we're actually just switching that. So all of these pieces work together. So without supporting content that gives support and direction to teachers and students, there would be limited direction or help for students. And in terms of the curricular question, there's a big difference between standards and curriculum. Curriculum would be the resources, the scope and sequence, the textbooks, the curricular units, the day-to-day work that goes on, and that is totally separate from the expectations of that the standards set. And we absolutely, you know, as a service, the State Department, the Academics Department, actually also pulls in, you know, members of Idaho's Talented Teaching Corps to review all curricular materials that are put on the list. And further, it's absolutely up to the local districts to decide what their curriculum consists of, whether they choose a set of resources off of that list or not. So, like most states, Idaho is very much local control in terms of the day-to-day instruction, the curricular, how the standards are taught is what curriculum does.
Follow up, please.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate that, and I agree with your description there. So if we're in a science class and there is something we're studying, it doesn't matter. You know, we're here obviously focused on climate. It doesn't matter. And there are two scientists out there, and they both write a paper. And they kind of take different approaches to the same set of data. Should we have a standard that would influence the teacher or the local school district to say, only take this scientist's opinion because our standards and our supporting content say that, in this case, are the primary factors. And since the other scientists may not believe that, you know, maybe one side of the issue might be left out of the scientific discovery for children.
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair and Representative Clow, I think the answer is that science is principled on ongoing inquiry that welcomes skepticism, that welcomes continual, you know, work and verification of existing scientific consensus. And what we reflect in our standards should be, you know, the consensus of the scientific world, notwithstanding the fact that as new evidence comes on board, science loves to be challenged. That's the nature of inquiry. And so I think the answer is we absolutely keep an open mind. We also know that the body of scientific knowledge is vast, and much of it is very, very well established by peer-reviewed articles over and over. So it's about evidence, and it's about replicable evidence and preponderance of evidence. So the fact that the weatherman can't tell you how many drops of rain you're going to hit your shoulder if you walk out tomorrow at 11 o'clock when they say there's a 100% chance, they can't tell you that, but they can tell you you're probably going to get wet. So I think the answer is that this is why we continue to revisit standards, and this is why these are long overdue, because we have standards that exist now that are fairly vague and not particularly helpful, frankly, to students, teachers, and parents.
Follow up?
I'm sorry to mean that. I agree with virtually everything you said, and I'm not even sure I can find something I disagree with. However, in writing, the state comes out with a policy that says we need to be teaching this direction, we need to be teaching this topic, and we need to be coming up basically along the lines that something has a these are the primary factors. We've already come to a conclusion in the standard. And at what point can the school district deviate from the standards and look at the content to say, oh, no, I've got to keep teaching that these are the primary factors, even though there's new scientific evidence. Why do we need that terminology in the standards?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair and Representative Clow, I think the wording of current models project are part of the answer there. You know, models used hard data. They actually go in and they put in temperature readings, they put in all sorts of atmospheric readings, then they project what, say, the potential rise in temperature will be. And so many times what they do is go back and they look at a period in the past where we have all the data, and so they come very close to approximating what's going forward. Not to say that those things are perfect, but they have been very accurate. So I think the answer is, and just like our discussion the year before about age of the Earth and so forth, is what we really want students to do is engage with the tools that scientists use every day, and that is data analysis, creating models that that can provide evidence, creating arguments based on deep analysis of data. So, you know, unfortunately, this is the last set of standards for us to review for 5 more years, sadly. But we will be back with these again. And I think what we know is that, you know, science is always evolving, and science it welcomes healthy skepticism at all levels.
That was Education Department Academics Director Scott Cook speaking before the Idaho House Education Committee today. You also heard from Republican Representative Paul Amador of Coeur d'Alene in that clip. Retired teacher Dick Jordan, who taught in public schools in Idaho for 35 years, told the committee it's negligent to deny our children access to 21st century science.
The consequences of these global assaults are significant for our success as a species. Therefore, it is imperative that teachers have sound science standards behind them in order to help students understand and address these planetary problems, and so they can compete professionally in our global market. We're here today. Sorry. I love technology when it works. We are here today not just for those students in classrooms across our state, but for tomorrow's nurses, farmers, lawmakers, teachers, bankers, and citizens who deserve the very best science and science education, not some watered-down, censored version. We can't ignore science even when it makes us uncomfortable. Healthcare, agriculture, and resource management, to name only a few, simply cannot operate on alternative facts and piecemeal pseudoscience. They require state-of-the-art methodologies and research protocols in order to do their work in today's technological world. In closing, I've spent my entire adult life working with our best and brightest in both rural and urban settings, and I know firsthand and without any reservations that these students are extremely intelligent and highly motivated, and they crave information and ultimately knowledge.
That was retired Idaho teacher Dick Jordan speaking to the House Education Committee today. Numerous students and members of the public testified, and when the House Education Committee ran out of time, Chair Julie Van Orden scheduled the hearing to continue at 8 a.m. Mountain Time tomorrow. The full House was set to adjourn after a brief meeting tomorrow at 8 a.m., giving the Education Committee as much time as it needed to continue the hearing. But Assistant Majority Leader Brent Crane of Nampa moved to have the House reconvene at 10:15 a.m. because the body had not made much progress on its agenda items today. That move passed by a 39-28 vote, and the Idaho Education News reported Van Orden was not happy with the schedule, but said the Education Committee will still reconvene at its hearing at 8 a.m. Mountain Time tomorrow at the state capitol. Police arrested two Canyon County jail deputies Monday on suspicion of attempting to incite an attack on an inmate who injured one of their fellow guards during an escape attempt last year. According to the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office, Canyon County fired jail deputies C. Cade Shipley McConnell and Corey Weatherman last October. According to the Idaho Press Tribune, Canyon County court documents say prosecutors charged 26-year-old McConnell with solicitation to commit aggravated battery and the 46-year-old Weatherman with aiding and abetting the solicitation. Court documents say a guard was injured following a failed October escape attempt by an inmate at the jail. After the attempt, the two guards showed other inmates some confidential documents that outlined a child sex abuse case against the inmate in an attempt to influence inmates to react violently against the man. The inmates were supposed to attack the man in the jail's library when he was alone. The Pullman Police Department is hoping to record video footage from two new cameras installed on Military Hill because of a recently sighted cougar. According to Pullman Police Commander Chris Tennant, police have installed the cameras after the department received reports of five sightings from other police and local residents. Tennant told the Daily News the first reported sighting was on January 21st. By an on-duty officer who said the cougar crossed the road in front of him. A Tuesday report from a woman on Bella Vista Lane told responding officers a cougar chased her dog in her backyard. The Washington Fish and Game Department said after receiving the report, it was unlikely that was a cougar. Washington Fish and Game Department Public Information Officer Madonna Lewis said the department believes the cougar has access to plenty of deer in the area. Lewis said the cougar is probably a young male between 1 and 2 years old, which has just started looking for its own territory to hunt in. She said most of the young cougars humans see fall into that category. Lewis said unless the cougar begins attacking livestock, pets, or humans, there's no need for the Fish and Game Department to take action. She said cougars are secretive, and by nature, they make it their business not to be seen. Lewis said there has been one recorded cougar attack death of a human in the state. That was nearly 100 years ago in Okanagan County. The Pullman Police Department is advising residents to immediately call 911 if they see a cougar. A pedestrian from Tacoma is listed in critical condition after being struck by a pickup truck in Colfax yesterday afternoon. According to the Daily News, crews transported 32-year-old Don Nguyen to Whitman Hospital and Medical Center, where emergency personnel determined Nguyen's injuries were severe enough for him to be airlifted by Life Flight helicopter to Sacred Heart Medical Center in Spokane. Colfax police say Nguyen was crossing Main Street at the intersection of Harrison Street when he was struck by an unidentified driver. Police blocked the street at the scene for several hours and rerouted traffic while they investigated. The Associated Students of Washington State University will conduct a referendum which will ask students to approve a $5 per semester fee to fund the Daily Evergreen, the university's student-run newspaper. The referendum is scheduled for next month. At last night's ASWSU Senate meeting, student and supporters of the Monday through Friday newspaper crowded into the room to see the referendum added to the general election ballot. Former editor-in-chief Gabriela Ramos told students, "We have the students' backs, and tonight we ask you to let the students have ours." According to the Daily News, the Daily Evergreen student newspaper faces nearly a $130,000 year-end deficit. The Student Media Board has already made more than $37,000 in cuts in the daily operations by reducing maximum paper size, travel and color costs, computer and server replacements, and deliveries to Moscow. Also, Evergreen managers have ordered $19,000 more in additional reductions as well. 3 weeks ago, the Student Media Board voted to cut summer production and circulation that will save the paper money, which has had a 61% decline in revenue over the past 10 years. Evergreen editor-in-chief Madison Jackson said the Student Media Board voted earlier in the day yesterday to cut printing and staffing by one day per week if the referendum does not pass next month. Office of Student Media Director Miller said he would like the paper's balance to be closer to $25,000 and the university would like that number to be higher. Daily Evergreen editors say the university-wide spending cuts announced in October disproportionately affected the Daily Evergreen, which relies primarily on advertising for additional revenue. The university declared all departments should make budget cuts of 2.5%. The Evergreen editors have been considering several options to bring up the reserve amounts, including cutting production to 3 days a week and changing to a tabloid-type layout, which shrinks space. Board members say cutting to 3 days per week will negatively affect journalistic output and threaten student staff salaries. In the wake of the budget problems, Evergreen staff members have adopted a new motto on the paper's front page banner, which says, "No PR, no BS, no retreat, WSU watchdog since 1895. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. There's going to be rain tonight, 100% chance. And some snow between 7 and 9 p.m. possible. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Steady temperature around 40. Tomorrow, it looks like rain all day. 80% chance. High 46. Breezy. Southwest winds 10 to 20. Gusts up to 30 miles an hour. 60% chance of rain before 10 p.m. Friday night. Mostly cloudy. Low 29. West winds 10 to 15. Gusts to 25. Saturday, 30% chance of rain before 10 a.m., cloudy, high 48, and 80% chance of rain Saturday night, mainly after 10 p.m., low 42. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, 35 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up, Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine. And at 7:30, we'll have a special interview with two traveling bands that have come to town to play a show at the Bayou tonight, Planet What and Viet Ram. So you can hear some of their recorded music and listen to them talk about traveling around and music and so forth at 7:30 tonight on the radio. And maybe you can decide whether or not you want to go out to the Bayou to see the show. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. And if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial, now broadcasting at 1100 watts and online.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.